Hey everybody, and welcome to the Inside the Ropes podcast here on the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh, and I'm joined, as always, by Sandra. Hey Sandra, how are you?
Hey Kenny, I'm doing all right. The sun is shining. It's a lovely day in Grand Rapids, Michigan. How are you?
I'm drunk. If I'm really honest with
you. You are.
I am drunk.
You decided to get day drunk today.
So here's what happened, ladies and gentlemen. I have a friend called Dr. Dunbar. And she had what we call in Scotland a madian last night. And she was like, are you free this afternoon? I said, yeah, I'm free for like 2 hours to have a couple of drinks. That was the message. And
how many drinks is a couple, Kenny?
It's 7 or 8 double vodkas is where we are. And it's 7 p.m.
Yes.
So, and the thing is, annoying is like, we have some serious stuff to talk about on the podcast in relation to wrestling. So I'm trying to get this out the way now. I am very drunk, but I'm committed. I should be committed, but I am committed to, you know, what we're doing here. So the thing is, I've got a large orange squash here ready to go. Hulk is asleep in his little dog bed below me, which is the most adorable thing you will ever see in your life.
He's just so cute.
Oh, God. You can't even with him. So I think we're fine. I think we're going to get there. I think
we will. I believe in us. I feel like we've podcasted under far worse conditions.
I've podcasted way drunker than this.
Like, oh, yeah. Way absolutely.
Drunker. Like you know when you feel drunk and you know you're drunk, but you're not drunk enough where you can't form the opinion that you want to form.
Right.
So that's where we are. But, you know, like, the thing, and I'll tell you this. When there is sun out, Glasgow is fucking wacky race territory. Wacky races when you're in the beer. So we were in this pub on the outside, just like sitting, watching people go by. And my favourite bit is there's like these guys who are like, how do you say this nicely? They're guys who look like they have been in fights in their life, right? Like a lot of fights. But they're the guys who wear the Dior and Givenchy t-shirts.
Uh-huh.
It's my favourite thing. It's my absolute favourite. It's like, you know, a guy wearing like a Givenchy t-shirt, like, I fucking kicked his cunt in last Tuesday, no? And like, that's the way the voice goes. I'm like, I don't know if you're giving off...
You're just making me miss Glasgow and all the sights.
All the sights of yeah, those people and what they go through.
It's just... There's a different feeling in Glasgow when the sun is out, and I do miss it terribly.
Because Dr. Dunbar and I were talking about it, it's the whole, like, there is this tagline in Glasgow, the people make Glasgow, and I think they do, because it's just an absolute shit show, but also kind of charming. It's a weird
It is thing. Charming. Like, it's very strange. It's like the friendliest people who might also stab you.
You never know what you're going to get.
Like, it could be both, you know? Like,
it could be both.
Know.
That's
and
the
I
glory.
Kind of love the adventure of it.
Am I going to get stabbed? Is somebody going to aggressively give me a hug? Whatever is going to happen will happen.
We're in a pandemic, so a hug seems pretty deadly, too.
Yeah, I mean, pandemic, you would never fucking know it.
Mm.
Anyway, but it's a whole thing. So, but we are here to talk about a lot of professional wrestling. We're here to talk about the Wednesday Night Wars. We're here to talk about a couple of listener questions about some really good topics that I think are worth getting into. But before we do, Sandra, I would be remiss if here on this Saturday, the 8th of August 2020, and, you know, the year of our Lord 2020, if we did not devote a little bit of time, a few minutes, to the concept of Raw Underground.
Yeah, we should probably devote a few minutes to Raw Underground, shouldn't we?
Kenny? Why don't you get the anger out of the way and express the anger before we talk about the minutiae of the actual thing that it was? So tell people why you are fairly frustrated at Raw Underground and maybe its inauthenticity to originality. I'm surprised I got those words out.
I am very proud of you. So to hear Raw Underground called the brainchild of Shane McMahon just makes my skin crawl in all of the ways. Because Raw Underground is essentially like a shitty photocopy of the Crucible storyline in Chikara. I know a lot of people have compared it to Bloodsport, and a lot of people like were saying it's like a Brawl for All concept. That's not what it is. It's side by side. If you look at the Crucible and you look how that was filmed and you look how that was edited and you look how there are people surrounding the ring, banging on the ring apron in like a kind of an underground fight club setting, is 100% from Chikara. And it's
Can you give people just a very kind of brief, for people who've not watched Chikara, what was the Crucible? Like, what was the concept?
okay. Yeah, so the Crucible was like sort of this underground fight club that Ophidian founded, right? Because and this is where the Crucible is significantly better than Raw Underground, because there's a lot of storytelling and there's a lot of history with it, like there was with a lot of Chikara concepts. But basically, Ophidian did not believe that Mike Quackenbush was running the Wrestle Factory effectively. And threats kept coming in to take over Chikara, right? Like Nazmul Duun happened. There were all of these outside threats, basically. So Ophidian got together this band of people, and he would collect them in the night, and people would, kind of get recruited. And then they would come to this underground fight club, and they were forced to wear masks for some of it, like so that they would be faceless. And it turns out that these were like the jobber characters in Chikara. I'm trying to remember what their jobber names was were now. Like Enziguri Evan was Demoralist, and like I think it was like, I mean, they had a lot of characters like Headlock Hank and or Hip Toss Hank and like all those kinds of stuff, right? And so they had these characters all kind of like in this underground fight club where the rules were very different to professional wrestling, but it was never supposed to be like a real fight. It was still a professional wrestling thing. The matches lasted 2 minutes, and something that was different to Raw Underground is like one of the rules was if you go out of the ring, then you lose too. So they would call that like a ring out loss, and they would use that for storytelling. And they aired these vignettes of this underground fight club, like leaked secret security camera footage from this underground fight club after Beyond Wrestling shows. So they started this very organically. And then eventually it sort of integrated with the main Chikara roster and the main Chikara storylines and whatnot. And they would have, matches under Crucible rules, which is like without ropes, and then having, all the people around and all that kind of stuff. So it was a very like big fleshed out concept that a lot of people worked really hard on. Many of those people were never credited or compensated. And to hear this like Fight Club thing being called the brainchild of Shane McMahon when it was all fucking Ophidian is just it's a lot. And a lot of people were very, very upset on Monday.
So if we take that away from it, because I mean the thing is, look, I very much doubt that Shane McMahon watched Chikara and was like, "I'm going to steal this thing." I think what's,
WWE had access to their archives.
but what I think's happened is there's people who have been like, "This thing's really cool. Let's pitch it to the higher ups," and that's been the way that
Yeah.
it kind of
I mean, I don't think it was
happened.
actually Shane McMahon,
No,
but
although
like
some.
he's obviously playing an on-screen character, but WWE, the company, has basically taken this concept, made it a lot shittier, and then put it on television.
Now, somebody pointed something out this week that I've never noticed, that Shane McMahon has completely limp hands, like a gay man,
Well, yeah, that's why his punches are so terrible,
and I've not
too.
been able to unsee it ever since. Okay, so take away the Chikara part of it. So Raw happened on Monday, and there was the whole Shane McMahon's going to return, and stuff's going to happen, and then I went to sleep and watched it in the morning, and you had messaged me saying, "This is really good, you're going to like it," and it's been very divisive. Some people
I
say.
liked Raw as a whole.
So did I, like, because I was, there was, Will Gavin from TalkSport had said that he thought it was one of the worst Raws of the year, and I mean, I've been watching Raw every week for the year, like, from the beginning, and I think Raws, there's been good Raws this year, there's been bad Raws, there's sometimes, like, a desire to just black and white everything and go, "It's terrible," but, I mean, of the last, kind of, 2, 3 months, I thought this Raw had a lot more urgency to it, and Finn and I talked about it. There was a lot more kind of, you never felt bored. You felt there was always something going on. Do I think that Raw Underground is going to be the concept that is going to bring them another 1 million viewers back to where they were? No. But I think there was more stuff to it. So I guess my question, taking Chikara away, do you think that Raw Underground, like, when you watched it, is it something that they can make some stars from? Is it something that there can be interest in? Because what I think is worth pointing out, and I'm going to get these percentages wrong because I've had drinks and I can't find the exacts, but roughly, I know that Meltzer had said that last week's Raw, the July 24th, I think it was, episode, or the one at the end of July, had, like, in teenage viewers had dropped 88% in the third hour for female teenagers and had dropped like 53% for male teenagers. But then for this Raw, with Raw Underground, they like increased for both male and female teenagers. Like,
are you sure the male and female teenagers didn't want to know what happened to the boxes backstage and whether they had indeed fallen down by accident?
I mean, Charlie Caruso is a genius.
I love her.
She's, I mean, well, but I loved MVP being like, you're talking about boxes and I lost my title. But the point is that teenagers, both male and female, increased this week to see what was happening with Raw Underground, see what was happening with the show in general. Do you think that this is a concept that can be, is it something that, because what I've heard from a lot of people talking about it who were negative is they were saying, this is another thing from WWE that's not going to last. Whether it's the wild card rule or whether it's, you know, this angle or that angle, they don't trust that it's going to be something. Is Raw Underground something that could be long term, something they can do? Is it something that can get people over? Is there a positive to it?
There can be if they want there to be. It's WWE, so I don't trust that they're going to stick with it. But this is the type of thing that can spawn storytelling, and it's the kind of thing where you can tell some great stories. I've seen it done in Chikara. I've seen that this sort of Fight Club situation can be a fascinating story. And I know that I've listened to other people say that this could never work, or it feels too much like mixing fighting and wrestling. But if you present it correctly, then it can be the most compelling story I've ever seen in wrestling. Like, the Crucible is my favorite wrestling storyline. Like, it is my favorite, and it has been my favorite. And I'm bummed that it didn't really get a conclusion because the company's gone now, and there was a pandemic and allegations and all sorts of, like, all of the stuff that's happened this year has been a lot. But yeah, I mean, I think that and I was intrigued at the end of Raw with the Hurt Business coming in and saying, hey, we're taking over this. Like, I'm not super sure why Shane McMahon is like, good idea, I just created this thing, here, you can have it. But yeah, like, I think it could be an interesting concept. And I think because I've seen it done well, I think that if they wanted to stick with it and, you know, like, actually tell stories and make it into something interesting, they could. It's WWE, so I don't trust that they necessarily will, I guess. Because it seems like they just kind of threw it out there, right? Like, it has a different look, and so then it will intrigue people. Like, there was no why to, like, why these people are fighting other than they're Shane McMahon's paper dolls. It felt like Stephanie McMahon coming in and putting women into trios teams for reasons, question mark.
True. I mean, Stephanie putting the women into trios teams did work out great in the end, because we got all the stuff that we got out of it, even though it wasn't directly attributed to her. I mean, we got Babatunde, who I can't remember what his new name is.
I can't remember, but I mean, he was there.
Somebody made a
really good... He's their big killer, man. He's their Devontae's.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so I was listening to Brian Alvarez and Lance Storm talking about it, and Lance Storm brought up a good point, because he said that the thing that, for him, made it kind of unbelievable and not something that you could take forward is that if you're watching Dolph Ziggler, for example, do an amateur takedown, he beats somebody up in 30 seconds, how do we then take him seriously again in the regular WWE setting? So do you think that if they make a star in the underground realm, of if that's what we're calling it, is that going to be difficult to transition over to the main realm? Or, I mean, how much do you think they should experiment with it as a concept? Should this be... Because we saw the Hurt Business at the end of Raw coming out, and Lashley, who's obviously got MMA, you know, backgrounds, he was able to come in and batter people. How much should they use of it?
I don't know how to integrate it into Raw, because again, like, without all of the specific rules of the matches being explained, right? Like, because I don't think they really explained. Were there time limits on the matches? Like, I'm trying to remember, because I was...
They didn't have time limits. It was just a case of Shane was kind of the host and also the guy who stopped the fights when it seemed like somebody...
Like, enough was enough,
because
right?
It almost seemed like it was like a bunch of UFC knockouts in a row.
Yeah. So I think that... I mean, I think Lance Storm's point is valid there. I think it is difficult to understand why the matches would happen so quickly. That's another thing the Crucible did better, is that the matches were 2 minutes. So you would get a draw. Like, you'd have people wrestling for 2 minutes and sometimes there would be a draw, and then that would be unacceptable for, you know, the people running the show and stuff. So I think a lot more storytelling was accomplished in Chikara through the rules of the match that Raw Underground doesn't seem to have. It doesn't really seem to fit, you know, like, and it's not supposed to. It's supposed to be different to the regular Raw product, but I'm not sure how they integrate that and make it feel in any way organic. Like, if they have someone who's just like consistently knocking people out, and like say Bobby Lashley starts winning tons of Crucible matches, or say they're going to use it to get, you know, Babatunde over and he's going to be a big monster man. I think they can. And I think that when he comes to the main roster, he shouldn't be immediately having 15-minute matches with Dolph Ziggler, because if he's knocking people out right away, then that should be a thing that he does. And you could use that, right? Like, you could have him come to the main roster and say, hey, this guy has, you know, been trained in this underground style, and he's used to ending matches very quickly. And you could use that. Like, you could use that as a storytelling mechanism.
Yeah, I mean, when I was watching it, I enjoyed it. I thought Raw was good, and I liked the underground thing. I think that the difficulty is, for me, it's more about the, the faith that it's going to be pay off for you as a fan watching it is more my issue than me liking it or not. But I thought it was fun, and I mean, the women randomly dancing in the corner, I don't really understand why, but I have no problem with it. Like, go for it.
I was annoyed with that, because I was like, why do you have dancing ladies?
It seemed quite Shotgun Saturday Night-ish.
It did seem Shotgun Saturday Night, but it felt kind of regressive in a way, because, like, are they not having women fight in the underground then? Is it just, like, women are just dancers here? Because I don't love that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is that the women dancing, and you know that I'm the last person to be like,
if they would have had some dudes dancing with the women, then I would have been fine with it. But when, like, it's just like, hey, it's just women are here as set decoration.
Like, I am the last person to be like, let's fight for the cause, unless I really think that you should. But even for me, I was like, does anybody in 2020, man or woman, creatively, really think the best way is to have female strippers? As like the, because it's not like, if that's the only thing that's there, it just seems quite 90s and quite kind of like, now it's a case of like, I just don't think people buy that anymore. I think people think that the world's moved on. And like you say, if they had men and women, fair enough, but they're never going to have men doing that on the show.
Why not?
No, I'm with you. Why not? I'm with you. Look, if you want to sell that to anybody, you can sell it to me. Quite easily.
I know. Like, if we could get some greased up dudes and speedos also dancing around provocatively, then I'm here for it.
That's what I get Steve Gunn to do every Sunday, pay-per-view
of
or
course.
Not. We've got a couple of other listener questions that I thought we'd get to before we get to I was gonna say Raw and SmackDown, NXT and AEW. Couple
yeah,
of drinks.
We're not talking. I didn't see SmackDown.
NXT or AEW. So Leighton Martin wants to know, hey guys, wanted to ask if you have a chance to cover it on the podcast. What are your thoughts on Tony Khan as head booker? Hadn't realized until recently he was so involved in booking the show, and his background makes that interesting. So, I mean, overall, we'll go into the minutia of AEW this week, but what do you think of Tony Khan as an overall booker, being the kind of head guy that distributes stuff to other people? How is he doing?
I mean, I think overall in the men's division, he's doing well. Like, in the men's division, there are coherent stories and there's a lot of intrigue and there are characters who are fully rounded and fully formed. And I understand most of their motivations every time. Like, even on weeks where the show doesn't hit for me necessarily, it still feels alive. So I think in the men's division, he's doing great. I think that it would be really awesome if he remembered that women could be on his show too.
I mean, yeah, for me, he is doing well in terms of the men. The thing with the women is, so I watched the Deadly Draw tournament, uh-huh. And like, I know you're going to feel differently. Ariane Andre had no place in that show. I'm sorry.
No,
like,
she was bad.
But not even being bad, right? She left WWE 4 years ago, and she's had zero matches since. She's not passionate about wrestling. There's just no way. If she was passionate, she would have done something. And she came in...
Well, I don't think that's fair. I mean, Becky Lynch left wrestling for 7 years before she came to WWE. Like,
yeah, and then she came back and she was great. She was really good.
Yeah, she came back and she was good.
But Ariane's not.
I think the criticism is that Ariane, like, wasn't that good in the ring, but I don't think it's fair to criticize her for not having matches in between.
I think, for me, it is. I think that if you've left 4 years ago and you were bad, and you come back 4 years later and you're still bad, then you're bad. Like, it's not like she went away and tried to Because the difference is, Ariane didn't say, I'm leaving wrestling, I don't have any interest in it anymore. She just never really seemed to have an interest before, now. And it's, I think she's just the wrong hill to die on. Like, because when I was watching the show, the first match with Mel and... who's Mel's partner again? It was Brandy and
Penelope
Ali.
Ford?
Yeah, Mel and Penelope Ford. I liked that match. That match was fine. It's the opening match of the tournament. They had Shaw Guerrero and ring announcer. Medusa came out to kind of be the, you know, the legendary figure. They had Vita Scott on commentary. That was all good. I had to turn the second match off because it just felt like... I thought Anna Jay was okay. I liked Tanara Conte, but I think that she just was in a bad situation. Nyla Rose was trying, but she's not a leader in the ring. And it just felt really
clunky.
I thought
Tay Conti was, like, the best one in that match, and that's a problem.
She could have done dirty in that match, because the thing about Ariane is, like, Ariane's come back, and, like, she felt like you wouldn't even put her in NXT TV. Bad. And, like, if that's where she is.
She felt like early wrestling school. She felt like early wrestling school. And Anna Jay has not had very many matches in her career either. She's very new. So you have, you know, like there's nobody in there that really feels like they could lead. And it's crazy to me. Like, it's just insane to me that there are women like Lufisto out there and like Solo Darling out there and like Allison Kay out there who don't have contracts. And like, you're hiring Anna Jay? And Ariane Andrew? Like, I get why you would hire Ariane, because, like, for social media clout and just star power, I guess. I don't know. Like, I was looking forward to seeing what she had to offer at Big Gay Brunch, and I was looking forward to maybe her being better now, and she wasn't very good. And maybe she will get better, but, like, she hasn't yet. And it's, you know, it's your first match back and it's hard and stuff. But like, I don't understand AEW putting all of these incredibly new women together when like wrestlers that are really good exist. Like, I just don't get it. I'm baffled by their hiring decisions, and I'm baffled by the fact that this is not on TV. Like, if you want to present it as like, this is a thing that we care about and we care about building our women's division, and you're just putting it on your YouTube channel on a Monday. Like, you're not even replacing Dark with it. You're having it as, like, a third thing.
But, I mean, if that main tag from that show was on TV, it would have been the worst thing in the world. It was awful. It should not have been on TV. And that's the problem, right? Because if they had...
Which is why they should be hiring people with more skill than they have.
Yeah, no, exactly. But that, you know, that doesn't change the fact that Ariane Andrew, like, you know, if her credentials coming in where she did this, like, she was... She didn't look like she had gained anything from the last 4 years. She looked worse than she did before.
I don't know. I thought she looked mildly competent, which was better than when she left WWE.
Like, I'll watch a lot of stuff, but I was just like, I need to turn this off. I can't do it. Like, it wasn't for me. I think the other issue they've got, and to go back to Leighton's point about Tony Khan, is that Tony Khan has given sort of Kenny Omega the women's division, as far as we're made to be aware. But he's obviously very clearly more... experience with the Japanese women than he is with the American women, and then with the American women, they just don't seem to have a lot of the American women that they need to have to make this a competent division. You know, I feel like they should just throw as much money as they can at Tessa Blanchard as one, because you need people who are really good. Allison Kay is another one. They should throw money at her. Like, get people in who are going to be good, and then maybe they are going to have them in the tournament at some point. But it just seems like the women's stuff is really bad. It's bad. And
it's very bad. And it's not like, it's not even being given a chance on TV to be better either. Right. Like, and I know that a lot of the argument is they don't have women to be compelling over the male stars, but then you need to fucking hire some women who are out there who are killing it and hire them to be stars, and then you need to put them on TV and let them do what they do, right? Like, they're building one women's story right now with Britt Baker and Big Swole, and so the only women's match on the show on AEW was Big Swole versus Rebel, and it was meant to be kind of like a short jokey thing, because Rebel was like, I can't wrestle, I'm not a wrestler, she is, but you know, the whole idea was that she's just been kind of Britt Baker's makeup artist and personal servant and wasn't ready to compete against a competitor the likes of Big Swole. So I got it for what it was, and it's good storytelling for the Britt Baker Big Swole thing, but like, where's Hikaru Shida? She's the champion. Love her as champion. Think she's a great champion. But like, you have her as champion and she's just kind of either in a nothing match or at ringside.
But I think that's the problem with like the main tag with Nyla and Ariane against Anna Jay and Tay Conti is like if they had had a killer match, you go, oh, that deserved to be in TV, but it didn't deserve to be in TV. That's the problem, is you want to have these matches on the YouTube show where you go, that match should have been on TV, it was so good. But when it's not, then you kind of go, well, so then it's essentially, so the women's division isn't good enough to fight to be on TV. That's where the problem comes in, is that when I was watching that deadly draw, I was watching it going, I want something on this show to go, this needs to be on Dynamite. Needs to be. And nothing on that episode needed to be. I think the first one could have been, like the Brandy and Ali against Mel and Penelope Ford could have been in Dynamite just fine, and I wouldn't have had a problem with it. The second one should not have been. But they've got, another six matches in that first round, so hopefully it gets better. I mean, as we record this on Saturday night, if I just kind of quickly have a look at AEW's YouTube channel, because the success of it is going to be based on how many views it got. And the Deadly Draw tournament got, let me just find it here. Hold on. Do-do-do-do-do. The Deadly Draw got 502,000 views, which is not bad at all, because Dark's only got 364. So the key is going to be, do people come back next week to check out Deadly Draw? And maybe they do. Maybe people are willing to give them more leeway, but they need to, if you have people giving you that leeway, give them the respective delivering.
Yeah, I think they're doing a disservice to their women's division kind of at all turns at this point, because they're not hiring people to have a competent division. And then when the division is suffering, they're not giving it time on TV to develop either. So it's kind of like you don't have, it feels like we're talking about main roster WWE in like 2014, right? When we were having the conversations of, well, the women's matches aren't as good as the men's matches, so that's why they're not getting TV time, but they also weren't getting enough TV time to prove what they could do. Like until Stephanie McMahon brought in her paper dolls and started all of the Meaningless
When
Trios
she made
matches,
women.
when she invented women, like the WWE just kind of was like, we know we have to put women on the show, but we don't really care about them. We're not going to give them storylines. And, other than when Stephanie McMahon is involved and beats Brie Bella at SummerSlam, which still just drives me insane. But I don't know. Like, it's just very, very frustrating. And I think it hurt my enjoyment of AEW this week because, like, with that and then with the whole heels thing, which I feel like we should talk about.
Well, let's talk about the heels thing. So AEW announced a paid program called AEW Heels, and the idea behind it is it's a platform for female fans only. The way what they called it was a new community for women who love wrestling. Be who you are, come as you are, because we're all going to come together as a community to change the world. It is a $50 annual fee, which works at $4 per month, where you will be on Zoom calls and, when things open back up again, live meetings with Brandy and Aubrey and other women. The idea, I guess, is for it to be a safe space. It's kind of divided opinion. Brandy's ended up deleting her Twitter account over it. How do you feel about the AEW Heels community? Because obviously, it's a community that I and a lot of people who are listening to this are not joining. It's for women. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I'm not joining it either. I feel like I understand what they're trying to do. And the thing is, like, this isn't the first time they've announced AEW Heels. They had like an initial meeting of it that was, I think, via Zoom like a few months ago.
The Twitter account's been active for months. It's already, yeah, the logo and the Twitter have already been active. It's just not been clear what it's exactly going to be, but now we know.
Yeah, like they didn't have the membership fee set up then, but there was like an initial Zoom call that I think was like $10 or something like that, where you could talk to people. I wasn't on the call. I don't know how it went. I don't know who was there. But I remember it being a thing, and I remember just kind of being like, okay, that seems like kind of a cool side project. I think where they're running into trouble with this, and where I have a problem with it, is that because they're not presenting their women on TV as stars, and because they are, I guess, performatively saying that they care about women and they care about inclusion and they want to give women fans like kind of a safer space, or like they're basically taking a group of fans who often does feel uncomfortable at wrestling shows or feels uncomfortable in that fandom, because like if you're a woman at a wrestling show, you get quizzed on your knowledge, or you're asked who you're dating to be there because clearly you couldn't be the fan yourself, right? Like I go to a lot of shows by myself. It doesn't happen as often as it used to, but like it happens still fairly regularly that people are like, oh, you can't be the actual wrestling fan here. You must be like sleeping with someone who's in the ring. It's frustrating, right? Like it is frustrating being a female fan. And what I don't love is that it feels like AEW is saying like, hey, we can take this marginalization and monetize it. And I don't think that's their intention. I don't think that they're trying to monetize inclusion and that kind of stuff. Like, I don't think that that's their outward intention, but that's the way it comes across to a lot of people. I understand that they need to make money. And if this were something that were being done on top of a robust women's division and on top of programming that actually appealed to female audiences, then that would be one thing. But because they're not presenting a product that is for me in any way, right? Like specifically as a female wrestling fan who is a fan of women's wrestling too, because they're not putting any effort into that programming and building their women's roster and all of the stuff we were just talking about, to then say, oh, we have this space over here for female wrestling fans and you can pay to join it, just feels extra icky.
I mean, yeah, so my take on it is I actually am very pro AEW heels, which I don't know if is a shocker if people don't believe. The thing is, so as an example, our Patreon, the top level is $10 a month, and we do offer a lot of content for it and all that kind of stuff. To me, I've seen a lot of men commenting about this, saying, well, you know, the internet should be better. Yeah, it should be better, but it's not. So, you know, that's the first thing. It's not better. I see a lot of people coming at Brandi Rhodes, and I'm not saying this to get in Brandi's good books or for people to think that, you know, I know her, so I'm trying to suck up to her. It's not that. Brandi Rhodes doesn't book the women's division. That's Kenny Omega's job. So if you have a problem with the women's division, it's him that you should direct your sort of annoyance at. She is someone who pushed to get the Deadly Draw tournament, which is having a female-only show. The plan, as far as I'm led to believe, was that that would have been on TNT if the pandemic had not happened and they would have had their second show by now, but that's not the case. So they have added the Deadly Draw show. It's $4 a month, and for that you get, you know, you do the virtual meet and greets, you do the themed parties, you do the Zoom calls, you do the Q&As and all that kind of stuff. For me, it's a case of, if that's, you know, if you want to do it, go ahead and do it. If you don't do it. I think that I think the criticism is kind of unfounded, to be honest. I think that it's one of those things where, yeah, in an ideal world, everybody would be the same. But like on a daily basis, and this is just me as a guy, and I don't even look specifically for female only content, which is what I guess this is. There's so many creepy guys all the time, whether it's somebody talking about how hot a woman is and how they want to fuck her, or whether it's belittling a woman because she's a woman and all that kind of stuff. It's all the time. So I understand the idea of having a platform that's only for women. But, you know, people are annoyed about it. People are annoyed that there's a subscription fee for it. I've always been of the mindset of, if you want something, take it. If you don't, don't. And I think that Brandi, like you say, I think her intentions are good. Mm-hmm. And if you know, look, I don't want to add it to speaking out, because that seems like I'm adding it on to something that's very serious. But speaking out is a very serious thing. And there's a lot of women who have been affected by it. And like you mentioned, Sandra, about going to shows and somebody saying, well, who are you fucking, or what are you doing? And this is going to be an environment that's safe for people. I don't think $4 a month is, you know, trying to rip people off at all, really. I honestly think
they should have advertised it as $4 a month and not as $50, because people are seeing $50 as the price tag. And I think that's caused a lot more outrage. Like, I'm not outraged about it, but it does feel icky to me. Like, it feels like a bad idea, especially in light of the criticisms of your women's division and of your programming aimed toward female audiences. Like, it feels so WWE to me. It feels so Stephanie McMahon. It got under my skin. It did. I like the idea of there being, you know, a community for female fans, but I mean, those communities already do exist. and you can find them for free. So
I
I
mean,
don't know. Like,
to be devil's advocate though, but if people want to, I mean, yeah, I mean, you're right. Maybe they should have advertised $4 a month. But I mean, again, that's the kind of thing of like, is I've in the world right now, everything's black or white, right? It's like you're either if you're a conservative, you're a Trump supporter. If you're somebody who likes the Queen, you're a monarchist. If you're somebody who likes this show, you're homophobic because it's a homophobic joke, and it's like everybody's black or white to everything. So to me, it's a case of if you want to join it, join it. If you don't, don't. But they're not putting a gun to your head to asking you to do the $4.99 and or $4.08, I think that is $4.08 a month. But I mean, this is not. There's only so much that Brandi Rhodes can do as a woman to change the division when she's not the booker. And it feels like if there's going to be a safe space and that's what they're offering, like take it if you want it, don't if you don't.
Yeah, and I agree with that. Like, I don't think it's a great look for them right now. And I think Brandi coming back at people on social media about it, I understand. Like, I understand why she would be upset of like people coming at her, because people came at her, I think, quite harshly over this. I definitely have criticisms of it, obviously, but I think people were pretty harsh to her. But she also was coming back at people in a very snippy way, and then to be snipping at people about their criticisms and then to delete your Twitter and you're the one who's supposed to be offering social media training just doesn't really sound like it's not a good look. And I'm sorry, it's not a good look. I like Brandi Rhodes a lot. But I don't think that was a good look for her.
I think what's coming out of it is that with the AEW women's division in particular, it's like because I think the difference is this is supposed to be, and they should brand this better. This is not supposed to be for people who want for fans of the women's division. It's supposed to be
No.
for female AEW fans, and that's kind of what it's supposed to be. But it's kind of murky. But I mean, it's difficult because the women's division is nowhere near as ideal as it should be, and then she's kind of taking the flak for it, right? Like she's taking the flak for it not being what they want it to be, and there's not as many people going for Kenny Omega, who's the guy booking it. And, I remember he did an interview maybe a month ago, 2 months ago, where he was basically saying that he thinks that it's fine, it's good, and I'm like, if you think it's
Oh, I
good,
remember that interview. I thought he was delusional.
yeah, like if you think it's fine, you should not be booking the division. Because it needs to be way different than it is.
No, it does need to be way different. And I think everyone kind of wants to jump on an anger train, and I don't want to jump on an anger train about this. I think people misunderstood what it was. Like, 'cause it, like you say, it's not for fans of the women's division. It's supposed to be for female wrestling fans, which also is it's slightly troubling because it erases like any non-binary people who also are really need like a place to not be shit on in the wrestling community because it's a whole situation. But I don't know, like
I
just
mean,
I don't think the
they
creative
are,
handled it super well.
yeah. I mean, the thing is, I mean, in that sense, it's like I mean, AEW do have an openly trans performer who talks about it all the time. They have an openly, Sunny Kiss who refers to herself as she. So I mean, I think they do pretty well in that sense. I think that's maybe something that's a little bit unfair to target them for. But I get what you mean. Like it's if you say female, then you're making it completely male and female, but that's what the world is right now, so you have to start somewhere. I think the intention was good, but I think that I've always, and maybe this is because I'm a promoter who has, had people before, like when we did the Undertaker shows, people were like, you're a crook. You're a crook for doing this. It's like, look, if I could charge this for less money, I would. Like, I 100% would. But it's like metrics are metrics, and you have to, if you want to go to something or you want to join something, that is what it is. Now, I
Of
don't know the
course.
behind the scenes to AEW heels, so maybe that is a fairer point. But I always think that if there's something that you want to get, either pay what it is or don't get it. That's to me, I always kind of go back to that
I
part.
just think like there's a kernel of a good idea with AEW heels, and I think that they just presented it very badly. Because I think if you marketed it more as like virtual meet and greets, which is kind of what it is, right? Like if you're on Zoom calls with Brandi and other stars in the AEW women's division, like if you have Chris Statlander on the phone or whatever, like you get to talk to those people. That's access to those people. I think that's kind of cool. Like they're like market it as more of a virtual meet and greet, but I think just because they marketed it as we care so much about women and we want to be so inclusive, and their television programming doesn't seem to share those values, I think that's where it riled a lot of people.
Yeah, and maybe they need to refocus the marketing. I do want to say, one of our listeners, Luke, had asked us to discuss the Landstorm speaking out thing. We're going to discuss that on the Overrun, because we will just not be able to tackle the Wednesday night shows if we do that one as well.
Was that the intergender wrestling thing?
Yeah. So we'll have there's a good discussion there to have that we'll have on the Overrun.
Yeah. We'll talk about it on the Overrun. That's good.
Let's go on to NXT.
I have thoughts.
I figured that you might. So we will delve into those on the Overrun. So we'll talk about NXT and AEW. The numbers this week shocked me big time. AEW with 901,000 viewers, NXT 753,000. You watched both shows. Did that number shock you in any way for either reason?
It seemed high. Like, just the combined seemed high, which is good. Like, it shows that people are more interested in the shows.
I think that's about 600,000 combined, 600,000 viewers less than that watched Raw on Monday. Because Raw was like 1.716 million, I think, combined with AEW and NXT, it was 1.65. So it shows that almost as many people on Wednesday still want to watch wrestling, which I guess is a good sign.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Like, I want to see those numbers grow, because I want to see both shows doing well. I don't know that AEW was, like, far and away that much better than NXT this week. So for it to beat NXT so handily was interesting, but I don't know if it was shocking. I tend to think of AEW as more like the must-watch show, I guess. Like, I always watch AEW live, and then NXT I usually watch a couple days later. So
I feel like AEW had more kind of like big stuff going on. You know, you had
I think AEW promotes what they're going to do more in advance, so that you want to tune in to see it, right?
Well, I think because you had the big debate with Orange Cassidy and Jericho, and you had the Moxley Darby Allin matches, like, they were two massive things.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with NXT, it felt like it was like, There was decent stuff on the show, but none of it felt like killer stuff. None of it felt like you had... I mean, maybe the women's number one contender, but not a lot of it felt
Rhea versus Dakota was really the only match where I was like, I really must know. And even the tag title match, I was, I was into it, but it didn't... I don't know. Like, the tag division in NXT just seems like kind of an afterthought right now.
Yeah, it does. So let's talk about NXT first. We opened it with Rhea Ripley against Dakota Kai for the number one contendership for the NXT Women's Championship. Rhea Ripley has a new hairstyle that she is rocking the show of.
Platinum blonde looks good on her. She looks incredible. I love that she's like a blonde goth lady.
I bleached my hair blonde and went out for Halloween in 2004 as Billy Idol. And unfortunately, when I dyed it back, it went ginger for a month. So,
really?
Just think.
Do you have photo evidence of this?
No, I'm good.
Does Ollie have photo evidence of this?
It's before he knew me.
Damn.
Anyway, Rhea Ripley and Dakota Kai for the number
one. No, I wasn't going to post it. I was just going to be like, I want to laugh at you personally.
No, because it's pre-Facebook. So, like.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2004 was pre-Facebook. I don't think I even have a photo of it, but I did do it, and it was a look. But anyway, we've got Rhea Ripley and Dakota Kai for the number one contendership for the Women's Championship, and Mercedes Martinez ended up being the deciding factor in this to make Dakota Kai win the match and go on to face Io at TakeOver. What did you make of the match, and we kind of seem like we're pivoting Rhea into Mercedes now? Is that a thing that you like the idea of? Talk me through all your thoughts.
Have you met me? Do I like the idea of Rhea Ripley
versus
Mercedes?
I need to ask the question.
Of course I like the idea of Rhea Ripley versus Mercedes Martinez. It is straight from all of my hopes and dreams. I loved this. This ruled. Dakota and Rhea are awesome together. They are great at wrestling and great at wrestling each other. And this felt urgent to me. It felt like both of them wanted to be number one contender very badly. It felt like the women's title was important. It felt like there was something on the line. It felt like a fight. And that dastardly Mercedes Martinez coming in. And I thought she timed it pretty well, too, like doing everything behind the ref's back and, hitting Rhea so that Dakota could take her out. I thought it was really, really well done. And this was one of those matches where I figured that there would probably be shenanigans. And I know that you would kind of wanted it to go to a triple threat. I like the idea that we're getting both Dakota versus Io Shirai, which should be great. And we're getting Rhea Ripley versus Mercedes Martinez, which should be so great, like so dope, right? So I love the fact that there are multiple women on this show, and I know their motivations, and it makes sense too, right? Like, because Rhea Ripley has had history with Robert Stone, and she has humiliated Robert Stone in the past. So it makes absolute sense that Robert Stone's, you know, heavy now would want to come after Rhea Ripley because they want to still give her shit, right? Like, because Rhea Ripley was able to take out Aaliyah and Robert Stone with relative ease. But Mercedes Martinez is a whole different ballgame. She's big and badass and amazing. And I'm so excited about it, Kenny. Like, I'm more excited about Rhea and Mercedes than I am Dakota and Io. But I'm really excited about Dakota and Io, too, because I think angry Spitfire Dakota Kai versus badass babyface lady Io Shirai is just, it's going to rule. Like, those are two matches that I'm so excited about.
Yeah, I think that Io and Dakota doesn't feel as box office as Io, Dakota, and Rhea. But then I think that the sacrifice that you're making there is to have Rhea versus Mercedes, which I think in the long run is probably the best.
But it does get you out of having Rhea lose another title match, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so, which I think is good.
I think in the long run it's probably a good decision, because even though Io, you know, has the match with Dakota, which doesn't feel as big, I think then Rhea, it does make sense to have your two big stars, which are Io and Rhea, go into different matches, because then mm-hmm. it's like you're building other people. So I think that all in all, it's like AEW, take a look at how to present women. I mean, that's not a completely fair thing to say, because the NXT women's division is so much better. But at the same time...
Well, yeah, because they've put time into it and they've hired people who are good.
I mean, the issue is that, I mean, look, I don't have as much knowledge about women's wrestling as you do, so maybe I'm not mentioning as many names, but, you know, they need to get much better women. So find them, please, ASAP.
And they're out there, so, like, hire them.
In the next triple threat match to determine who's in the ladder match at TakeOver 30, we had Damian Priest, Oney Lorcan, and Ridge Holland, and Damian Priest won. What did you make of Ridge Holland here in his appearance, and were you... I mean, you weren't happy that Damian Priest won, because obviously Oney Lorcan would have been your pick, but how did this match play out for you?
It was fine. Of course I wanted Oney Lorcan to win. I want him to win the world. Ridge Holland looked good, I thought.
One of the worst things that you can say, Sondra, is it was fine. Like, that's like that. That's not a compliment from Sondra. Essentially your way of saying, it was fine.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, the wrestling was good, but I don't know. I'm just not really into the Damian Priest of it all. And
so can I ask you a question? I am confused, and I want you to try and fix my brain. So William Regal, with his big clock behind him,
right,
said the following. Now, we had a graphic that came up that had five people in it, as far as I was aware.
I'm very confused about all of this situation.
Because
we had the
five people, which was Damian Priest and Bronson Reed and Dexter Lumis, who are the three qualified people for the match.
Uh-huh.
And then we had two further blank people.
But Dexter Lumis is out now.
So we're told Dexter Lumis is out. Then we were told that the people who were not pinned in their own match, which is Johnny Gargano, Finn Balor, and Ridge Holland, are going to have a triple threat match to determine who is in the match.
No, I thought it was going to be a fatal four-way, because wasn't there going to be another one?
And then Dexter's out. Oh, no, sorry, it was two singles matches. Yeah, there was two singles matches.
Because it was four people. Yeah, because it wasn't a fatal four-way, it was two singles matches.
So
because...
it's like Balor, Gargano, Ridge Holland, and a mystery person. There's going
to
be two...
Because there's still another contender thing to happen, right?
So then there's going to be two singles matches to determine who's in the match, but then there was five photos? What has happened? What has happened in that match?
I don't know. There are too many numbers, and there's too much.
Let me check.
I am just going to watch the TV, and then when they have people in a ladder match, I'll be like, okay.
Okay, wait a minute. Here we go.
This is who I'm watching.
So it says on Wikipedia, which is my way of knowing things. Okay, let me read out the Wikipedia entry. Maybe this will take us. Okay, so a series of triple threat matches were set up on NXT as qualifiers for a five-man ladder match to be held at TakeOver 30 to crown a new North American champion. That same night, Bronson Reed defeated Roderick Strong, Johnny Gargano to become the first qualified to that match. The following week, Dexter Lumis became the second person to qualify by defeating Timothy Thatcher and Finn Balor, but was later taken out due to an ankle injury. On August the 5th, Damian Priest became the third person to qualify by defeating Oney Lorcan and Ridge Holland. Due to Lumis' injury, two singles matches will take place to fill Lumis' spot to determine the fifth and final competitor. The wrestlers in those matches will be the ones who were not pinned or submitted in the triple threats, which are Balor, Gargano, Holland, and whoever is not pinned or submitted in a triple threat match between Kushida, Cameron Grimes, and a mystery opponent in the August 12th episode.
There are too many mysteries.
I can't keep up with that. And I don't think it's because I'm drunk, because you're confused as well.
I'm confused as well.
There's going to be five people, is the answer.
This feels like, remember when we were confused about the Cruiserweight tournament and the rules and the numbers and all that stuff? And I was like, I'm going to just watch it. I'm just going to watch the show and watch the matches. And then when we have a final, I'll be like, oh, we got here. I don't know how we got here, but we got here and it's fine.
Yeah, I'm with you. I do have a confession though to make. So yeah, so there's gonna be a five man. It's gonna be.
Did you like Ridge Holland? Did you think he was good?
I think he's got something. I definitely think he's got something. I was like intrigued by him. Like I was like, I think that he has. I don't know if he's there, but I think that he's someone who I would definitely be like, give him some stuff. You know, explore where he can go. I think that I think there is something there. So we've got Bronson Reed, Bronson Reed, Damian Priest, Kushida or Cameron Grimes or the mystery person, and then two more people. I don't know who they're going to be. Let's just watch. Let's just see it. But the fact that William Regal said it all with the graphic and I was more confused afterwards tells me that it's not clear.
It's not incredibly clear, no.
I do want to say this, and I feel dirty saying this. I am really into Pat McAfee versus Adam Cole now. And
are
I did
you
not
really?
And I did not expect to be. The fact that Adam Cole
hated this.
The fact that Adam Cole is the babyface against the outsider Pat McAfee, who is just an absolute cunt, kinda worked for me. Like, you know that I've most of the time when Adam Cole has a match, I'm like, oh great, another Adam Cole. Now I'm in. Now I'm like, he's gonna have a match that's not gonna be able to go.
You're the person that this is for.
Yeah, because finally, I don't need to have a 35-minute, 5,000-move kick-out over every pile driver thing. Now it's going to be more like a 15-minute thing with a clear arsehole that I want him to be up.
It's not 15 minutes.
But Elite, look, an Adam Cole match that's less than 15 minutes, welcome to my dream. Welcome to my dreams. I thought they did a really good job here. The whole, because obviously Imperium were facing Undisputed Era for the tag titles. McAfee obviously got involved here. He called Adam Cole an elf. Adam Cole tossed a cup of water at him. We had Triple H and Shawn Michaels and all that out. They were trying to separate them all. Imperium ended up retaining the titles. And then after the match, Cole comes back. McAfee comes back. Calls Cole an itty bitty short little bitch. And then cheap shotted Adam Cole with a running boot. He leaves. Triple H shoves him at one point. This is for me. Welcome
this
to.
This is very for you. It's so not for
this
me.
Is the first thing that NXT has done since like TakeOver In Your House when I'm like, thank you for doing something for me. I'm so happy. But I know you probably hated it.
I'm so glad you're enjoying it. I just thought it was dumb. I thought it was so dumb. I was like, why is this football talk show man? Why? Like, why is this happening? And part of the thing that got to me during this is I understand what they're trying to do with, like, having Beth Phoenix get all offended. Because I don't know, are we meant to think that Pat McAfee's just being a dick to Adam Cole and everyone's standing up to him? Or is he being a dick about wrestling in general? Like, I don't really understand what Pat McAfee's deal is, other than making short jokes about Adam Cole, who's not the shortest one in Undisputed Era, even. So what even are we doing here?
So I think the idea is from the work thing they did in the talk show. I mean, it does kind of make sense. Like Pat McAfee kind of was like basically all but saying, "You do wrestling. Wrestling's fake. Like who cares? Like you're not really an athlete. I'm a real athlete because I did the NFL." And then. Uh-huh. Now they're building to Adam Cole is the babyface defending wrestling and Pat McAfee is the up himself football heel.
Adam Cole is not supposed to be a babyface either. Adam Cole is supposed to be a dastardly heel. So that's part of what doesn't work either is the alignments are wrong.
But Undisputed Era did just wrestle as babyfaces against Imperium.
They did. It's just confusing to me. It's confusing because Undisputed Era have always been dicks. And so I don't really understand that part of it. And like, having Beth Phoenix storm out when she's not on camera to storm out, it felt weird and awkward.
I really wish that she had been there to storm out. Like, I wanted to see her storm off.
Because that's part of my problem with the presentation of this, is that if you're going to involve your commentators in the story, which, I mean, you should be able to do that, right? Like, you should be able to have your commentators be part of the story, but NXT is being so disingenuous and not mentioning that there's a pandemic and not mentioning that their commentators aren't there. So when they show Tom Phillips and Pat McAfee and you hear Mauro Ranallo and Beth Phoenix, it's a disconnect, right? Like, they're not calling attention to the fact that Beth is broadcasting from home. They're not calling attention to the fact that Mauro is broadcasting from home. And if they would just say that, and if they would just like call attention to the fact that there's shit going down in the world, then it wouldn't feel so false to me. It wouldn't feel so ridiculous, because to just have her be like, I just can't do this anymore, and then her voice was just gone like a ghost. I was like, okay, so you stormed off to probably go play with your daughters? Like, I don't know. Like, I just thought it was dumb. I just thought it was so dumb. And I don't want to see Pat McAfee, and I don't want to see him wrestle, and he's just so irritating. And it's, I'm really happy that you enjoy it.
Yeah, I thought it made total sense. Like, I think the idea that, like, they're doing the whole, like, Undisputed Era are slowly becoming baby faces, which is kind of more how it should work, rather than just like, we are turning because we're no longer evil. Like, I like the idea that, you know, the rest of the team are feuding with Imperium because Imperium and them had a fight. Adam Cole was on a show with Pat McAfee, and Pat McAfee disrespected wrestling, so he's standing up for it. Like, to me, it was almost more natural than the idea that, like, we are turning because we're no longer bad people. Like, I like the idea of that. And I think that the key will be, and I, you know, like, for you who was not into it, is can on the night they deliver something that you like? And that'll be the
key. Plus, there was a tag title match happening, and I didn't want to see Adam Cole punching a football man. I was like, there's still a match that's supposed to be happening right now, and it's for your actual titles.
I think that, you know, I know Finn and I talked about it as well. The idea is going to be, does Pat McAfee draw you in, people? And I do want to see Adam Cole kick his face in. So that's why it works for me, I guess, more than for you. And, I mean, NXT did this week have more viewers than they had last week. So, but I mean, they didn't really advertise Pat McAfee. They did advertise he was going to be there. They didn't advertise it that much. I guess we'll see. We'll see what they do at TakeOver. I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be good. But it is funny to me, like, you know, for the first time ever, I'm really excited about an Adam Cole match. And it's the first one that you're probably not excited about.
Oh, not at all. Like, I just don't want it.
So, make sure to sign up for Patreon for us reviewing TakeOver 30 later on this month and see if they've turned Sonda around or if I've turned in Pat McAfee. We'll see what happens. Let's move on to AEW on Dynamite. It was a pretty packed show. We kicked off with the 12-man tag with Page and Omega, FTR, and the Young Bucks against the Dark Order. It was Brody Lee, Colt Cabana, Stu Grayson, Evil Uno, 5 and 9. Now, I rarely want to say that Dave Meltzer is insane, but he said this was one of the best matches he's seen in ages, and I'm like, it was good.
It was fun, but, like, I wouldn't say like it was like great.
I will say this, though. This was Brody Lee's best night he's had since Double or Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was really good here. He was really good at being the leader of the Dark Order. He was trying to, you know, be in charge of things, trying to make sure they fucked with the other guys. And in the end, they won. You know, when Brody Lee hit the the discus lariat on Page at the end, after he'd come back from FTR going away, I thought it worked. I thought it was a fun opener, and I think that the Dark Order stuff did a really good job of putting over the other guys who are the real story, and it gave Brody Lee something. So I thought they actually did a pretty bang-up job. How did the opener work for you, and all of the elements of which there were, like, 1,000?
Yeah, no, I really liked it. I thought it was fun. I thought there were a lot of shenanigans. I think that the Dark Order being able to kind of dispatch FTR and have the numbers game on their side and kind of work as a team, I think really worked in their favor. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. And when Adam Page came back in, I was like, oh, Adam Page versus Brody Lee, that's something I could get behind.
Elsewhere, I wanted to get your take on this. What did you make of MJF and his campaign headquarters and his kind of promo about Moxley and the idea that he's treating it like a political campaign? Is that working for you? Is it not? Talk me through.
I think it's funny. I think it's, you know, like, it's an attempt at topical humor, and it makes me laugh because, of course, MJF would be campaigning, right? Of course he would, because he is better than us and he knows it and we know it. And we deserve better, and we deserve MJF as our champion. It works. I think it's funny. Like, He's just being a dick. It's
does,
fine.
Does MJF and Moxley feel like an all-out main event match to you?
It does. I think MJF's promo last week was like a good way to get it started. Like I said, like if there's a world title involved, for some reason, that's like the switch in my brain to be like, okay, that's for everybody else and not for me. But I think Jon Moxley's had some killer promos, and I think MJF's been killing it too. His campaign stuff, I don't know if that makes it feel more like main event to me or if it just makes it feel a little bit more kitschy, but it seems incredibly in character for MJF to be doing this. And Jon Moxley is really, really good at selling me on anything that he wants to sell me on. So I'm into it. I don't know. Is it working for you?
Yeah, it really works for me. I think MJF was great here. Like, him treating it as a political campaign just feels like it's authentic for his character. And
yeah, he's so smarmy.
And, like, I've not been into Moxley title defense since he won more than I think I'll be into Moxley and MJF. Because the idea of him being like, you know, we deserve better than John, and, you know, John's not the champion that we want. Like, it's just so clever, especially when we're, like, almost entering in the US, the political season, and what's going mm-hmm. on. Like, it's very current. It's very on point.
I mean, I just voted on Tuesday, so...
Yeah, local elections are happening already. So, and I think that, like, the idea... I think their promos back and forth are going to be great. I'm really into it. I think this is...
Like, I'm excited for their first, like, face-to-face confrontation.
Yeah, and like, if you know, I know we're early, but like, I think MJF should beat him. I really do. I think that one of the things that AEW have not done very well is building up heels to lose. And I think that MJF being the champion and coming out of All Out is great. So I really hope they pull the trigger on him.
I mean, I wouldn't be mad if they did. I wouldn't be mad if Moxley retained, but it's something that I'm into for sure. More than I normally am with a world title. Like, if they can get me interested in a world title match, that's pretty impressive.
We saw the kind of, well, not the debut, but we saw Matt Hardy coming out and talking about how he's gonna, you know, give the people what they want and give them himself. And it ended up with him and Sammy Guevara having a kind of back and forth because Guevara came up from behind. And Matt said, "Sammy, I knew you'd come." They had a fight, and then Sammy ended up throwing a chair into Matt Hardy's face, which had him bust open, which was not meant to happen. Sammy ended up going off the stage through a table.
Wait, he wasn't supposed to get busted open?
Nope. That was not supposed to happen.
Wow, because that was a lot of blood.
Yeah, because the blood in the main event was supposed to be the color for the show.
Oh.
And then Sammy Guevara goes through the table off the stage, or goes off the stage through the table onto Matt Hardy. Did this do anything to provoke interest for you in a Guevara and Matt Hardy feud?
Yeah. I'm into it. It's fun. It's a lot more fun than Matt Hardy being Private Party's cheerleader. I don't really understand what that was all about. So I think that AEW deserves some credit for seeing that something isn't working and then kind of shifting to something else, right? Like, we set it up last week. We had him call out Sammy Guevara or whatever. And yeah, like, for Sammy Guevara to just be the little prick who wants to come after Matt Hardy, it's good. It's fine. This match was fine kind of way. But like, yeah, I'm into it. I want to see what they do next week.
Yeah, they're listening to people. Because the problem is, broken Matt Hardy really is meant for an audience. It's meant for a crowd, and it's not.
Uh-huh.
And it, you know, he had to change it up. So I think this is a good short-term thing. I don't know if it's a long-term solution for Matt Hardy, but it's definitely better than him being
Private Party. It's something to do on TV, though.
Yeah, it's better than him being Private Party's dad.
Yeah.
So we had the big debut of Matt Cardona in the ring, team with Cody against John Silver and Alex Reynolds. They obviously got the win, as we would expect they would, in a 12-minute match. How did Matt Cardona do for you in his first night in AEW? There was people wondering, you know, what it was going to be, how similar it would be to Zack Ryder. How did he do?
He seemed like Matt Cardona. He seemed like Zack Ryder.
Is that a compliment? So is that a good thing, a bad thing?
I think he's never been, like, the best wrestler in the ring. He's more about, like, character stuff. But he's, like, he's good. And they were really getting over his passion for wrestling. He's just never been, like, one of... Well, I mean, I guess he was in 2011 when he was, like, everyone's dude. But, you know, like, I've always liked Zack Ryder fine. But he's just never been, like, one of my personal favorites, I guess. So, like, it was good to see him. And I think the match was fun. And it went well, and I think the outcome was very obvious, because I don't think that Alex Reynolds and John Silver are going to be beating Cody Rhodes and Matt Cardona, and they didn't. So yeah, like I enjoyed it fine. It's just, I guess I just don't have strong feelings about it either way.
I am. So this match didn't really work for me. I'd hoped that it would. I think the problem was that we were building towards the Matt Cardona hot tag at the end. And like John Silver and Alex Reynolds, if you're somebody who just watches Dynamite, you don't know who they are. You've not been given any reason to think they're stars. And they were like beating up Cody for
They're
like.
the dudes from Dark Order.
Yeah, they're the dudes from Dark Order. So like, it's almost like if. I don't want to say Cody's Steve Austin, right? But if you say that Cody's Steve Austin, it's like, would Viscera and Midian be beating up Steve Austin for 10 minutes? Probably not. And I think the problem is because they haven't really built those guys up. It didn't feel like it really was authentic and it was something that you'd believe. And then we built to Matt Cardona coming in. He just. I don't know. It didn't seem that there was a lot different from Zack Ryder. It didn't really seem there was a lot there. It was just basic wrestling.
I feel like this is about what I expected from Matt Cardona, honestly. So it's not. I wasn't underwhelmed because I guess I didn't expect that much.
Yeah, I feel like if he's going to be a big success, we need to see more. I mean, look, it was the first match. You know, we can't shit on him just from the first one. It was fine, but I think that we were building to this big thing, and I don't. It just didn't feel like he. It didn't feel like he massively delivered. It didn't feel like he underdelivered. It feels like we still need to see more from him. I feel like I'm like a judge in the X Factor. We need to see more from what you've got.
Yeah.
And we'll see if he gives it. We saw Scorpio Sky post-match coming out to stand up to Cody, so they're going to have a TNT title match next week. It'll be good to see Scorpio Sky in a big match.
Yeah. I think that's one that I'm looking forward to more than I've looked forward to some of the other TNT title defenses. I think Scorpio Sky and Cody should have a really good match, which is excellent.
So then it led us to the debate, the Super Wednesday debate in AEW. It was Eric Bischoff who was the guest moderator for Chris Jericho against Orange Cassidy.
Did you knew it was going to be Eric Bischoff, right? Because
I
like
got
that
it
had
spoiled
been,
for me, which was a shame.
yeah.
This is my favorite thing that Orange Cassidy has ever done. He was brilliant here. This segment to me was the best thing in both shows. It was so great. Like, Jericho was just hamming it up as he should. Orange Cassidy was very clearly not talking. And then when he starts talking about the global sea levels rising and gives the very articulate answer, and then at the end he kind of gives the promo to Jericho being like, imagine if you get beat by the guy who puts his hands in his pocket. And you know, Jericho and Bischoff says that Cassidy's won the debate, and Jericho's been like, I've never liked you for 22 years. This to me felt like the best part of the Attitude Era. This felt like it was a massive Raw is War thing that I would have seen back in 1999. And I think this is why AEW won this week, is stuff like this, where they're giving you something that feels fun and you can laugh along and you know where the characters are going and they give you what you want from the characters. So I loved this. I'm curious how it worked for you as a big old Orange Cassidy fan.
I loved it. I loved it, loved it, loved it, loved it, loved it. Orange Cassidy is the best. And every time I say Orange Cassidy is the best, it's because of stuff like this. And also his real good wrestling and his real good body control and him just being the best. I thought this was great. I was wondering when he was gonna start talking, because I figured he would eventually, right? And this was better than I expected it to be. And I expected it to be a lot of fun. But I think they just nailed it in terms of comedy timing. I think in terms of Jericho just being so completely up himself for the first few questions and Orange Cassidy just looking like he doesn't care. And then when he answers the question about global warming and the sea levels rising, Chris Jericho's just baffled, right? And the crowd, like everyone's baffled because they're like, wow, this is the guy that doesn't talk, but he actually does know stuff. It's not like he's stupid. It's not like he's dumb. It's not like he's incapable of speech. He just doesn't care. And he told you that. Like in the promo that he cut on Jericho afterwards, I think perfectly summed up Orange Cassidy in a way that I've never really heard him summed up before, promo-wise. Because he, like, even on the independent scene and stuff, I'm sure there were times that he would cut promos, but like, I haven't seen many of them. Because mostly it would be him coming out and being like, you wanna? And then people would be like, yeah. And then he would defend his title and he would carry it out in a backpack. And he was awesome, right? Like, he's so awesome. And I think this promo actually summed up his character. He's just like, I don't care. Like, I'm not gonna let you get to me. I'm not gonna let you get in my head. I'm not gonna let your mind games work on me because that's not my focus. Like, my focus is on beating you. and that's what I'm going to do. And then him calling out Chris Jericho is bullshit, right? Saying like, yeah, you booked yourself in a debate against the guy who doesn't talk. Like, I see your games. I see who you are, Chris Jericho. Like, you're all bravado. You're all pomp and circumstance. And you're all about stacking the deck so that you can win. But you have never faced an opponent. Well, I mean, he faced him, obviously. But like, Orange Cassidy is a new quantity for Chris Jericho. And so I loved it. I just thought it was perfect.
It was great. Before we talk about the main event, I want to very quickly say we did see the big Swole versus Reba match. They kind of pretended that Reba was not a wrestler, even though she was. It's all building towards Big Swole and Britt Baker. Are you into the feud? Are you into the idea that Big Swole is going to be the first person to get her hands on Britt Baker? We assume it all out. I mean, I know you said earlier you were frustrated this was the only women's thing on the show, but I mean, is this program working for you?
The program's working for me, I think. I mean, Britt Baker's been awesome in it, right? And
she's the best.
Having Rebel on the outside to be kind of like comedy fodder and stuff, it works. Like, I think she played her role here really well. It's kind of like Robert Stone pretending that he's not a wrestler, right? Like, even though he is.
The irony is, just very quickly, for me, like, I think Britt Baker is the best female character on both shows. Like, she's the best character, but the problem is that she's... It's almost like good for her that she's not wrestling because she's got to develop her stuff so much more, because that's the mm-hmm. only thing that she can do is cut promos.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if she's the best character on both shows, but she's up there. Like, she might be. I think that she's been killing it. I think it's unfortunate that she doesn't have much of a division to play off of. So, I mean, her promos and her character work have been great. And even when she was wrestling and she was being the role model and stuff, I think that she's been doing excellent work. I like Big Swole, so I think her looking like a badass and stuff is good. I don't think that she's, like, at the level to be, like, a main eventer right now. But I think... she's definitely like, she's very charismatic. She's very likable. And she is good. So I'm happy to see her on TV. It just bums me out that this is the only women's thing that we saw on the show, because I just feel like we need to see more women, and you need to have more of a division for them to play off of. You can't have Big Swole wrestle Rebel every week, you know, like, what is she going to do next week? Are there going to be more characters for her to face? Like, I mean, NXT and because they have an Indy Hartwell backstage who can put on good matches and, like, be a person.
Yeah, I mean, they need to obviously make that better. I mean, if they can have the stories like Britt Baker and Big Swole could and make it similar, then it would be good. But they've got a lot of work to...
Yeah, they need to build more stuff, basically. But Britt Baker's killing it.
Okay, let's talk about the main event, which was Jon Moxley and Darby Allin for the AEW title. They actually had me biting for a near fall here, which I did not think they were going to be able to do.
This match was great.
This was fantastic. Like, I think this was my favorite match on both shows, even though I think Dakota Kai and Rhea is probably a close second. But I thought they killed it here, and I think Darby Allin, he's such a star. He really is.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like, this was everything I wanted it to be. And even though it was a title match that was kind of just thrown out last week I still don't super understand why. But I'm glad that we got it, because I think Darby Allin looked incredible. And I think Jon Moxley looked incredible. And the two of them and their passion and their fire, and they're both being like crazy people, basically, right? Like, they will hurt themselves and they will hurt each other, and they don't really know the meaning of the word restraint, and they just went balls to the wall in this. And I was biting for near falls too. I was like, what if they do it? What if they actually put it on Darby Allin? I didn't think they would, and they didn't, but they had me biting, which is a good thing. Like, that's what you're supposed to do, you know? Like, you're supposed to be invested in the story and what's going on.
Yeah, this worked way better for me than, like, the Brian Cage Moxley stuff. Like, that's just
Allin's just so much cooler than Brian Cage.
Yeah, like, I mean, this reminded me a little bit, I mean, that's a long school reference and you've not seen it probably, but, like, this reminded me of, like, when Jeff Hardy faced The Undertaker on Raw, when Undertaker was the world champion and they had this ladder match, and, like, Jeff Hardy almost beat The Undertaker, like, and it was like, and after the match, like, Undertaker shook his hand and it was like, you almost got me. Like, you really did. And if it with Darby Allin, it's different because Darby Allin has done a lot more than Jeff had singles-wise at that point, but... it felt similar, like, of Darby Allin. He didn't just, like, lose this match. He almost did it. And, yeah, it was great. So, for me, I think AEW was a clearer winner this week. But Yeah, I think they were good shows overall. I had a fun Wednesday. AEW are going to be preempted, I think, towards later this month. So their show that was supposed to be on the 19th, I think, is now going to be on the 22nd, like an hour before TakeOver.
Yeah,
So
so it's a part of it is going to be head to head with Takeover.
yeah, which is, we will figure out how we're podcasting that week.
Which, yeah, like
So
that's kind of that'll be interesting podcast. Like they're not really doing us any favors. I was going to ask, like internationally, are they airing it on the Saturday then too? Or are
I
you
assume
guys
they
still
are.
getting it on the Fight app like you normally would?
I have no idea. That's a good question. I assume it's going to air the same time it's going to air on TNT. I
Okay.
would assume, but we'll see.
So I feel like if it's available on that Fight app, that would be like helpful for us
Oh
to
yeah,
get a
I don't
watch.
think they're going to let us see it that early. Like, I would be amazed if they did. I mean, if they do, great. We'll figure out a way to get that to you. Yeah, fun shows. Well, let's. Sonia, what are the plugs before we ride off into the podcast sunset?
Sure, you can follow me on Twitter at SondaRuthRW. Follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside underscore the Ropes. Follow us on Instagram. I'm at SondaRuth. He's at MCINTOKNNY and at Inside underscore the Ropes on Instagram as well. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes is where you can get tons of video content. Kenny just put up an interview with Tama Tonga that I thought was a delight. I really enjoyed that quite a lot. Talking about some New Japan stuff, which is, like we don't get as much New Japan stuff on our channel, so it was kind of fun to delve into that world. But there are videos going up all the time, clips from our live events from when we could run live events back in the day. It seems like so long
84
ago.
years ago.
It's been 84 years. But tons of clips always going up. So YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes. Please like, subscribe, hit all of the buttons so the algorithm's like, hey, we should show their videos to other people because that helps us out more than you realize. And the main way to support us, of course, is Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, where there is bonus content. We're going to have an ITR overrun where we talk about intergender wrestling, and I'm probably going to get real riled. So if that's something you're interested in, we also have Retro ITR, where we work through Raw and SmackDown from 20 years ago. So we're deep into the Attitude Era at this point, and there are shenanigans aplenty. There's also bonus content from Kenny and Finn, all sorts of different like pledging levels there on Patreon, and your support keeps the show going. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you very much for all your support. Really appreciate it. And to play us out, we played the Undisputed Era's theme tune because Adam Cole was trying to defend professional wrestling, the art form that we all enjoy. And that's why you guys are listening to this, or that, or to hear me drunk or Sondra riled. But it's all part of the fun.
I do get riled.
Thank you for listening, everybody. We hope that you enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we will talk to you soon. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Shock the system.